State of Ohio versus Tavares Cummings. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Meyer. I represent the State of Ohio, in this case, the appellant. I'd like at the outset to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case stands for the proposition that when a trial court accepts a plea of guilty and advises a criminal defendant that he's got the right to call a witness or call witnesses, that is the same thing as advising the defendant that he's got the right to compulsory process. In this case, the 8th District invalidated the plea of guilty because the trial court told this criminal defendant before he pled guilty that he had the right to call witnesses. And the state submits that based on the definition of call, as the trial court used it, that really is what the trial court meant by compulsory process really was what the trial court meant.
Although the defendant would not have known that, many defendants would not have known with that instruction that they could compel the person to be there by subpoena, would they? And isn't that really what the law requires?
Well, going back to this court's syllabus in State v. Ballard, the advisement simply has to be given in language that's reasonably intelligible to the defendant. It is not legally required that the trial court give a detailed explanation that compulsory process really means the power to subpoena a witness and, if necessary, invoke the court's contempt power.
Isn't that what compulsory suggests? If you tell somebody, well, you can bring a witness in if you want to, that's one thing. But if you tell somebody, now, the court will use its power to subpoena someone. If you have a witness you want here, we'll subpoena the person and make sure they're here as a witness. Isn't that different? Particularly for people who aren't versed in the law.
Well, for people who aren't versed in the law, it is lawful if the trial court simply says you have the right to compulsory process. And I would venture to guess, though I have no statistics to back this up, if I went to the Cuyahoga County Jail today and asked every criminal defendant in the jail, what does compulsory process mean? I don't know that I'd get an answer that's legally correct, but to say compulsory process is sufficient. Now, when the trial court says you've got the right to call witnesses, what does call mean? And the state submits that call means compulsory process based on the plain definition of the word, and I've used a dictionary that
Counsel, doesn't coupling that with the word right, when the word right is used to a defendant is spoken, it's you have the right, in which I think is a more well understood term as vesting a special power to the defendant, which I think is maybe more important than arguing over the word call or the use of compulsory process. I think defendants are more likely to understand the word right as something they're entitled to do. Right means an entitlement.
That is correct, Your Honor. This is certainly an entitlement that the defendant has a constitutional right to, and Ballard is clear that these rights are so important that whether or not a defendant still would have pled guilty or not, they must be given. But this language is sufficient. This language is plain, it's clear, and it's the language that most people outside of the courtroom would use. Most people outside of the courtroom, I would venture to guess, and I think reasonably so, would not say compulsory process. They would say, I'm calling my next witness, or the court
Let's get away from compulsory process. Nobody's suggesting that you have to use the constitutional words compulsory process. That's, Constitution is telling courts what essentially what people's rights are. Ninth District Court of Appeals approved this language. And you give up your right to call your own witnesses, subpoena them if necessary, compel them to come forward and testify for you. Is that more clear than the instruction given to the defendant here?
Is that, which case are you referring to, Your Honor?
Let's see. All this that stuff. I have to find it.
Anderson.
It's State of Ohio versus Ishia Vanna Holt, H-O-L-T, Holt, State of Ohio versus Holt. It's a Court of Appeals case, 9th District, June 23rd, 2004.
I would think that advisement is sufficient. Certainly there are many words that can be used that mean the same thing, and that's really the point of this case, why it was brought. But in 1995, in State v. Anderson, the 9th District addressed a case where the trial court advised, you are giving up your right to call witnesses on your behalf. And the 9th District, I would note that case was prosecuted under Justice O'Connor's tenure as the Summit County prosecutor. The 9th District advised, or held, that language was sufficient. It informed the defendant of his right to compulsory process. The 8th District has also held that in past cases. In State v. Benjamin, which was mentioned in our reply brief, in State v. Brown, similarly, the trial court's advisement of the right to call witnesses was adequate, and its adequacy that I think is the key to the Ballard test. Is this an objectively reasonable advisement of the right to compulsory process? The term strict compliance, I think, is something of a misnomer, because it almost implies that there must be a verbatim recitation or a magic words type of incantation. It's too high a phrase to address what the law really should require, which is that the court use objectively reasonable language. And
let me ask you this, counsel. You cited, and I said I gave you one, different versions of how courts interpret the constitutional requirement and Civil Rule 11 requirement. I voted to allow this case because I guess I thought there was a legal issue that we might write on. I'm beginning to wonder now whether just let the Court of Appeals opinion stand and it let each case come on its own and courts try to figure this out. There really isn't much law for it. Is there law for us to write on this? I don't think you're suggesting that we design specific words that should be used by every trial court in this instance.
Well, I think there is a need for consistency in the law, and that's why this case, and I think the case after it that this court has accepted for disposition of this case, State v. Rosenberg, shows that there is a need for consistency here. And I'm not suggesting that there be a laundry list of acceptable words. I am asking the court, though, to announce a proposition that allows objectively reasonable plain language that I think can be objectively accepted as meaning compulsory process. And while the syllabus in State v. Ballard implies that, I'm asking the court to explicitly state that as a proposition of law, that plain language to call a witness is sufficient. And I think based on the result we saw in this case, Cummings and Rosenberg, that proposition would greatly benefit trial courts, because when they give this advisement and the defendant answers yes, that he understands the advisement, that is enough. That is all that's required legally. So in summary, I would ask this court to both reverse the 8th District Court of Appeals in holding that the term to call a witness is not legally sufficient, and adopt a proposition of law that the plain language advisement to call a witness is sufficient to notify a defendant of his right to compulsory process. And I would ask to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Your Honors, in this very fact-specific determination, the 8th District made the unremarkable conclusion that the right to call a witness is not the same as the right to compulsory process. Right connotes a legal entitlement, but the issue before this court is the legal entitlement to what? And the legal entitlement that is discussed in Crim Rule 11, one of the so-called Boykin's rights, as this court has described those rights in State versus Ballard, is the right to not just call a witness, but to force that witness under penalty of law to come to court.
The way I read the Court of Appeals decision it implies that if they had used the words verbatim, the right to, you have the right to compulsory process, they would have been okay. Do you agree?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you think that the average defendant standing in front of you has any idea what that means?
Your Honor, the average defendant may or may not understand what compulsory process means, but the beauty of the plea colloquy is that when a trial judge is taking a plea, if he uses or she uses a term that a defendant doesn't understand, the defendant has that opportunity. It's a colloquy to say,
"I." Do you think the average defendant engages in a colloquy with the judge? I mean, I did a heck of a lot of pleas in my life, and I tell you, they aren't going to ask the judge, "What do you mean by that word?"
Your Honor, at times in that situation, they may or they may not.
So don't we exalt form over substance by saying, if you use the magic words, compulsory process, even though they have no idea what you're talking about, you're fine. When you use ordinary terms that they could understand, but it doesn't fit the magic words, you're not fine.
Well, Your Honor, two parts to my answer to Your Honor's question. One, using a term that's easy to understand but does not carry the same meaning is not sufficient. Call does not mean require. If there's any question about whether call equals compulsion, it's settled, by, if you will, by the state's briefs, where in using the dictionary definition, they are, and in discussing common parlance, the state's own examples show examples where the call is not the same as to be legally required. I came from a strict house. No one ever went to prison for not answering the call to supper. And along those lines, Your Honor, there are plenty of ways that we use call.
Do you think it makes a difference when you add the right to call?
No. And the reason why is because the right to call witnesses is not the same as the right to require them to come. Now, we have no problem with trial judges wanting to use plain language. Trial judge does not have to use the term compulsory process. Compulsory process will satisfy the rule, but it's perfectly proper and still strictly complies as required by law for a trial judge to use terms such as subpoena, to use the term that the trial judge used in the Ninth District excerpt that Mr. Chief Justice recited in his question to the prosecutor this morning. No one's saying that there is a magic word that must be used. But what must happen is that in strict compliance with the words used by the founders, a phrase must be used that conveys the two essential aspects of the Sixth Amendment right. Those two aspects being that there is an ability through the process of the court to legally require the testimony of the witness. And so therefore compulsory, legally required, and process the ability to do so through the right of the court. Now, I have a right to call witnesses that doesn't depend upon the process of the court. Plenty of times, witnesses are called who have not been subpoenaed. I'm not precluded as a party in a lawsuit from calling a witness who has not been subpoenaed. And those of us who've tried cases for a living have probably had the experience at times of having called witnesses that we did not subpoena, and at times having held our breath in fear that maybe they weren't going to show up in court after all, and we would have a problem because we had not compelled them. There is a difference between calling a witness and subpoenaing a witness. And it's that difference that the Eighth District, in this fact-specific case, properly focuses upon when it says, call is a word that's easy to understand, perhaps. They don't say that. The prosecutor says that, but call is a word that's easy to understand. The problem with the word call is not that it's not understandable. The problem with the word call is it doesn't mean the same thing as compulsory process. Subpoena means the same thing. Legally require means the same thing. Force under penalty of law means the same thing. A host of other words.
Compel. Yes. What if compel was used instead of call?
If compel had been used instead of call, that would have been sufficient. Mm-hmm. But call does not equate to compel. And the difference being, actually, compel would have satisfied the compulsory part. Strict compliance would still require to say, use the process of the court to compel. And so I should have expanded upon my answer to Your Honor. But compel and compulsory are synonyms. Call and compulsory are not synonyms. That's the difference in the case in terms of that. And so the two aspects, compel by the use of the court's process, and you don't have both when you make no mention of the court's process, and you only make mention of calling and not compelling. They've missed on one, they're insufficient on the other. And that does not equate to strict compliance. And that does not equate to strict compliance of the right to compel witnesses, which is different than the right to call witnesses. Yes, my client had been told by the trial judge that he had a right to call witnesses. And based on that common language, my client knew that anybody who was willing on their own behalf to come to court out of friendship, out of a personal sense of duty, what have you, could be called as a witness.
Well, hopefully they would have been called as a witness because they had something to say pursuant to the charge.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, is there any indication your client didn't understand what was being said to him?
Your Honor, the record reflects that does not reflect that my client had any problems understanding the trial court's insufficient colloquy and insufficient advisement of rights. But there's also nothing in the record to suggest that my client would have known of the right to compulsory process.
Wouldn't it be reasonable to assume that defense counsel would have gone over this with the client prior to the plea?
Your Honor, certainly the effective assistance of counsel would cause an effective attorney to counsel his or her client with respect to the ramifications of a plea. However, just as in Boykin, the United States Supreme Court vacated a plea where counsel was present, and counsel was present with the defendant when he pled. The fact of the matter is that, as Boykin and Ballard teach us, the guilty plea is the ultimate in the surrendering of rights. It is not just a confession, it is a judgment, as Boykin instructs us. And so along those lines, Crim Rule 11, in keeping with Boykin and Ballard, Crim Rule 11 requires that the trial court personally inquire of the defendant with respect to these rights. And so therefore, the law does not presume that the presence of counsel equates with the knowing, intelligent, and voluntary surrender of these rights. Rather, the law imposes, in keeping with the notion that constitutional waivers especially are to be strictly construed against the state, the law requires the one-on-one colloquy between the judicial officer and the criminal defendant. And that is not satisfied when the judicial officer's inquiry does not strictly comply with each and every one of the trial rights, the so-called Boykin rights, that are enumerated in the Sixth Amendment, which include, of course, the right to compulsory process. Mr. Chief Justice, on many occasions before, there are several occasions before this court, you've indulged me by allowing me to go over time. Unless the court has any further questions today, I can return 4 minutes of my day.
You put some time in the bank, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, You saved 6 minutes, almost 7 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Meyer, what is your response to the fact that we are supposed to strictly construe this right as opposed to substantially complying? And well, Mr. Martin's position that there's two aspects to calling witnesses, one being the nature of force that could be utilized and the power of the court to support that.
I would just note that in State v. Ballard, this court wrote that matters of reality and not mere ritual should be controlling in this type of situation. And I couldn't help notice that you, I think, litigated that case. What's necessary here is not strict wording. And that's the key difference. What is necessary is objectively reasonable dialogue. And that happened in this case. The legal issue hinges on meaning. What is the meaning here? And the meaning of call, the state submits, is a synonym of compulsory process. The transitive verb here, call, is something of a Swiss Army knife in the English language. It has many uses, but in this use, it is sufficient because it does notify this defendant that he has the right to command or summon, and that the failure of the person to show up has consequences. In other uses in the language, you also have a command and consequences. If the military calls its soldiers to battle and they do not show up, there are consequences. And this is a universally, I think, accepted term to call up soldiers to battle.
You don't think that, again, we're not talking about sophisticated people usually who are in the situation. You don't think that you have the right to call witnesses to appear on your behalf that some might think, and the Court of Appeals in Cuyahoga County apparently thought, that just simply means to many people that I can just request so-and-so to come and be a witness for me in the trial, that I don't have any, the court's not going to help me get that witness there. Isn't that what compulsory means? Compel and call are two different words, aren't they, and have different meanings?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. If a certain person is called, for instance, a call loan, if a lender calls in the loan, there's nothing optional about it. There's nothing to suggest that a person could ignore that
call.
But
that's a highly technical use of the word call. To call a loan is almost a term of art in that business.
Well, compulsory process is a term of art. But what matters is what the defendant, and Mr. Martin is correct, this is one of the most important times that a person needs to understand the language that a trial judge uses. But that language does notify that criminal defendant that he's got the right not just to bring in, not just to invite, but to call a witness to appear and testify. And it's the difference, I think, between invite and summon. As it's used by the trial judge in this context, call does not mean invite. Now, in other situations, it might mean invite. But here, it means command or summon. And the right...
Talking about a constitutional right, a Sixth Amendment right, why are we quibbling over what call means to this person or that person? This decision of the Eighth District Court of Appeals really is not difficult for the prosecutor of Cuyahoga County to live with, is it?
If the holding of the Eighth District is a stand and there's a list of magic words, that would be very easy to follow. But the state is asking that the court strike down a magic words type holding and to simply hold and extend Ballard to say that reasonable language really is what's needed. The state submits that trial judge used reasonable language, and the state would ask this court to adopt a proposition that recognizes the legal validity of that
language. So you're making, a reasoned request that we either modify or clarify Ballard.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And with that, I would ask that the court reverse the Eighth District below. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.